This is Faith in Action, the program that looks at how people put their faith into action in their everyday lives. Faith in Action is a production of Catholic Radio Indy. Now here's today's program.
This is Faith in Action on Catholic Radio. I'm Jim Ganley. Our co-host is Bridget Ayer.
Yeah, great to be with you.
And hey, we want to just take just a second here to thank everybody who made our share-a-thon, our recent share-a-thon here, such a big success. I mean, all of the folks that called in with donations, of course. Those donations are much needed. They are what keeps the station on the air. So thank you all very much for that. I want to thank you for some of the larger donors who made gifts that we were able to use for matching challenges to challenge other listeners to call in. And to all of our volunteers, too. We could not do it without them. They came in and answered the phone and did all of the paperwork and things like that. All necessary parts of a share-a-thon. So to everybody who participated, however you participated, thank you very much.
Yeah.
And if you happen to have missed it, you still can make a contribution.
Yeah, that's true. You can always donate. How do you donate if you want to donate to Catholic Radio?
The easiest way on your computer at CatholicRadioIndy.org, CatholicRadioIndy.org. There's a donate button there, and you can make an ongoing monthly donation there or a one-time gift, whichever you want. The monthly gifts, of course, we especially appreciate because our bills come due every month.
Yep.
And we need that stream of revenue to pay for them. So if you can make a monthly gift, great, or a one-time gift, but it's CatholicRadioIndy.org, or you can just give us a call here and we can tell you more about it. It's 317-870-8400.
Well, October is Respect Life Month, and kind of to honor that month, we have a very interesting guest with us. We have Dr. Elliot Bedford. He is the Director of Ethics Integration for St. Vincent Health, and we're going to be talking about a topic that he is going to actually be talking about at Our Lady Mount Carmel, Sunday, October 27th at 10:40 a.m. He's going to be talking about medical decision-making from a Catholic perspective. So I saw that in our bulletin, and we're going to be talking about that today, kind of as an advance.
Mention that title again, Bridget.
Medical Decision-Making from a Catholic Perspective.
No, is that a new office in medicine? I mean, the ethics is that kind of a new concern, or have there always been people on staff that are concerned about ethics?
So I can speak for St. Vincent and Ascension. That is a position that has been fairly longstanding because of the importance of Catholic identity and the complexity that you face when working in healthcare. It's been something that they've put a focus on for a good long time. Now, the church has been thinking about ethics and decision-making, particularly in medical contexts, for hundreds of years.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got theologians back, 600 years ago, thinking about questions am I obligated to move to a warmer climate so that I can extend my life a little bit?
That's interesting. Yeah. Never thought about something like that. We'll talk about, so you are a PhD doctor.
Yes.
Because I think it's good to make that distinction, but you have a pretty interesting background. I want to talk a little bit about your background and how you got interested in this area.
Okay. So I graduated from Franciscan University of Steubenville, Ohio, in 2008.
We have, it's really interesting. We have a lot of guests that are from Franciscan, and it's just something's happening there that's really casting people into mission or putting people into mission, which I think is pretty exciting.
It's a very vibrantly Catholic culture there, and that was one of the reasons why I went there.
Okay.
Particularly from the faculty. So then I graduated. Stayed another year, did a master's in philosophy in Catholic bioethics there with Dr. Patrick Lee, then moved to St. Louis to pursue a double degree, I guess, master's in moral theology from Aquinas Institute of Theology, and then a PhD in Catholic healthcare ethics from St. Louis University. So I got my Franciscans, my Dominicans, my Jesuits.
Right. You got everybody in there. You are covered. So what drew you to this topic? I mean, what drew you to this, I mean, obviously you kept going to school. You were really interested in this topic.
Yeah. The whole thing that really drew me first to philosophy and ethics was really the simple idea of, I want to go to heaven.
Yeah.
And the way that you get there ultimately is through living well and making good choices.
Yeah.
Okay? And the study of that is ultimately what ethics is.
Mm.
Also, I want to help others get to heaven by making good choices. And so by learning more about this this field, particularly with regard to, you know, really big decisions like you face in medicine, then those are the places where people need the most support, advice, and counseling. So that's really what drew me there. My wife, then a girlfriend at the time, was also like, she's a nurse, 10 years in the emergency room, and she's also a certified Creighton fertility care practitioner. She keeps me really grounded, and both clinically and just in life in general. And she said,
"Wives do that.
They have. It's a blessing, right?" But she said, "You really seem to be focused on this Catholic healthcare ethics thing. Why don't you go into that?" And then I found out that this was actually a career where you could do it in a health system, not just at a university. So once I found that, I knew the vocation.
That was it.
That was the vocation. Yeah.
Well, we're talking with Dr. Elliot Bedford, and he is the Director of Ethics Integration for St. Vincent Health. And is that Ascension Health, too? And I never know what the title is.
It's all one. Back in 2000-ish, the Daughters of Charity, who founded St. Vincent, they also founded this thing called Ascension, which is this national Catholic healthcare organization that was pulled together by a different groups of women and men religious. So it's been all one since back in the 2000s. Just the local name has been St. Vincent because that was historically what it was.
Okay.
So
that makes sense. Well, I'm sure a lot of people had that question,
yeah,
too. And that wasn't part of my questions, but hey, I'm glad you clarified that. Well, I want to talk about our topic, which is making decisions from a Catholic perspective, making these medical decisions. What are the big – are there categories of – topics that that most people have to deal with?
Well, so there's a nice document that the Vatican just put out called the New Charter for Healthcare Workers.
Okay.
That you can pick up online from the National Catholic Bioethics Center. And it really does a nice job of dividing issues into, there's kind of the beginning of life, the bigger section, which is kind of they call it the middle of life, or I forget exactly, just living is what their title is. And then there's the end of life. And in each one of those, you're going to see that the Catholic perspective on theology and philosophy, medicine, it really has a distinctive way of thinking about those types of issues.
Okay.
First and foremost, about what we ought to be doing to live well. I mean, that's, if you really want to understand what the Church is thinking about any particular moral issue, it's always, you have to think from the lens of, what are we trying to promote? What are we trying to push forward as we say this is something good, right? So the fundamental ethical or moral principle that you're going to find from Jesus' lips is, love one another as I have loved you, right? So the whole Catholic ethic is based on that, of how do we love like God loves. And so it's a very positively focused thing. It also helps draw lines around what doesn't help you love one another, right? So murdering people and enslaving them and extorting them. Those are all things that undermine...
That's in the not love category, right?
Right? Yeah, that's where you step out of bounds.
And I think those lines are kind of blurred today because, you know, well, if it's not convenient for me, you know, people can just be discarded.
Yeah, there is definitely a sense of, depersonalization is a component of the culture there that leads to those potential, I'll say, neglect, abuse, marginalization, persecution, all that kind of stuff. But it all comes back to, from the Catholic perspective, of refocusing on the human being and human individual as created in the image and likeness of God and the moral dignity they have because of that. Doesn't allow for us to allow let that marginalization or that depersonalization happen. So we're always having to call back to how do we promote human dignity, the common good, these types of things. That's the general, I'll say, disposition of Catholic ethics.
And I think when you think about people in the hospital, I guess the three things that come to mind are you're born, you're older, and you're maybe dying.
Well,
or, and the third would maybe you're in an accident. Those are the three things that come to mind. I mean, those maybe not be the categories. But
I'd put it as you look at the work of Jesus walking around healing people, bringing people back in. There's also a large component of just living with either illness or mental illness is a huge component that you find in the Gospels. It's still a prevalent thing. So there's definitely elements of just the life progression that the church's moral vision can speak to in a way that is completely unique and actually really, coherent and comprehensive. It all makes sense when you look at it like a big tapestry.
And I think that there is kind of a movement out there, you know, with physician-assisted suicide as one of the, you know, right to die or whatever, mm-hmm. that there's kind of this, I don't know, not in the not love category, but people think it's the love category, where they say that by allowing someone to die mm-hmm. or helping someone die by physician-assisted suicide is compassionate. Mm-hmm. Why is that, from a Catholic perspective, not in the love category?
Right. So
in the not love category.
Yeah, yes, that's accurate.
Okay.
I like the term that St. John Paul II used around a false mercy. Okay. Something there where you think that what you're doing is you're reaching out from a perspective of pity and I want to help this person eliminate their suffering. I want to get them right. But what the flaw in that thinking is with assisted suicide is I'm going to help alleviate their suffering by eliminating the person.
Mm.
Okay. Whereas you look in the Catholic perspective, what we'd call palliative care really focuses on how do we help this person live as well as they can despite all of these pain and limitations, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's absolutely the way that the church wants you to be thinking about things is you are not the master of life and death, and ultimately you are responsible for giving your life back to God, mm-hmm. right? One of the ways that you're then supposed to take care of yourself is to be able to basically appropriately deal with the suffering that you've been given. Because mm-hmm. everybody has it.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. There's no escape of suffering.
You don't
know?
Escape it. But it's how you deal with it, how you offer it back to God. And the palliative approach is more of a philosophy of medicine, but it's really, really consistent with the church's perspective on we're going to address pain and symptoms. So that you can live to the maximal experience of that you have capable right now based on your limitations from your disease or whatever the case may be. So that's the distinction that really focuses on promoting the good of the individual versus the one that says, well, the best way to get rid of your suffering is to get rid of you.
Right. And God might have plans for you beyond, you know, in whatever situation you're in, you know, you don't know that what God's plan is for you. You have to be open to that. We need to take a break, but when we come back, we're going to talk more about medical decision-making from a Catholic perspective with our guest, Dr. Elliot Bedford. Stay tuned for more Faith in Action.
Have you ever thought about joining the Catholic Church? Have you just wanted to explore the Catholic faith? All you need to do is call your local Catholic Church for more information. We are always happy to help you in your journey to discover and learn more about the Catholic faith. We have classes that are almost year-round, and the classes and information sessions do not involve making a commitment, and there is no pressure to join. Please call your local Catholic parish for more information today and start the journey of one day possibly becoming Catholic as well. God bless.
Think of all the media our young people are exposed to today. MTV, movies, what passes for entertainment on TV, song lyrics that are questionable or worse. Where do they hear the message that it's okay to be chaste and modest, or that it's not crazy to practice their faith, or to believe in a God who loves them and can forgive them no matter what they do? Catholic Radio is the answer. Be sure to tell your friends and relatives about Catholic Radio Indy.
Welcome back to Faith in Action. I'm Bridget Ayer. Jim Ganley's in the studio with me, as well as our guest, Dr. Elliot Bedford. He is the Director of Ethics Integration for St. Vincent Health here in Indianapolis. And we're talking about medical decision-making from a Catholic perspective. So I want to ask this, Elliot. Mm-hmm. Is there a difference? I mean, what light does Catholic, what is a medical decision based on a Catholic perspective? I mean, how is that different from a person that wouldn't be coming about that? I mean, aren't medical professionals giving those same answers, or are they drastically different if it's coming from a Catholic perspective? You get my question?
So I'll answer it from two angles. One is from a Catholic, like, physician, clinician type of thing. Mm-hmm. They're going to have ultimately this vision of what's good and worthwhile of pursuit for the patient. So, for instance, we just talked about assisted suicide.
Mm-hmm.
You'd see that as, well, that's ultimately contrary to what we understand as the nature of medicine in light of, you know, God's calling us to promote human flourishing. Okay, so they're going to say that's not actually a good medical treatment. So that's not something that I want to offer you or I want to participate in, right? That's the Catholic philosophy of medicine. Whereas if you look at, say, a secular approach, might look at it and say, well, the patient who has this autonomy is asking me for this intervention, and I am, you know, a professional who has the skills and abilities to be able to do this, and it's my responsibility to discharge kind of these obligations and give them what they want.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Now, in Indiana, just to be clear, physician-assisted suicide is not legal, so that could not happen in Indiana. But if they were in another state where it was legal, a secular doctor might look at it from a different perspective than a Catholic doctor.
Right. I would say those two different philosophies of medicine come to different conclusions based on what they think is actually good for the person and how to respect that person.
Okay. So let's see here. Are there common mistakes that people make in medical decision making, and how can people be best prepared to make good decisions?
So let me talk, and I didn't get to this in the last piece, about, so there's decision making from a clinician's standpoint, and then there's decision making from a patient's standpoint.
Okay, and that's a good distinction, because I'm kind of thinking it from a patient, because I would be a patient or a family member of a patient.
So, you know, you go to the clinician side, sure, there can be mistakes in terms of not knowing appropriate studies and facts and figures and techniques and all that kind of stuff, but that's not really what we'd be focusing on here. I'd say from a patient perspective, what we would want to say is, I wouldn't really so much call it mistakes. It's just more of, there's always this responsibility for us to understand more about our faith and how it should shape our decisions. Okay,
mm-hmm. So kind of being informed about what the church teaches and the application to these situations, right?
Right. So, for instance, at the end of life, there's often these questions that come up of, like, what do I have to do at the end of life?
Everybody asks those questions.
To make sure that I'm living according to the church's teaching. And so getting better informed about the church's teaching on, for instance, we call them proportionate and disproportionate means judgments, right? What's sufficiently beneficial to me that I want to use that treatment versus somebody else might look at it and say, well, you know, that's all the burdens that are associated with maybe a chemotherapy or being in the ICU. That's too much for me, and I think that I'm going to forego those because I want to pursue time with my family.
So within those proportionate and disproportionate means, and we can talk a little bit more about that, but is there room for, I guess, subjectivity of, for me, I just, you know, maybe I want to spend time with my family where, you know, if I have cancer, for instance, and I don't want to be doing the chemo or whatever.
Absolutely.
I mean, is that you have some freedom
so if
and
you
autonomy
look,
within those?
So if it's actually premised on that.
Okay.
So if you look at the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops put out the ethical and religious directives for Catholic healthcare services. In there, they summarize some important elements of church teaching, and one of those is what we're just talking about, proportionate, disproportionate means. And it starts off, their paragraph on those is, in the judgment of the patient, something that is either sufficiently beneficial and not excessively burdensome, it would be ordinary or proportionate, and then something that is excessively harmful or burdensome or ineffective or costly with no benefit in the patient's judgment is ultimately disproportionate, and they can forego those and pursue other things, like I said, time with family, living at home instead of having to be in the ICU, so on and so forth.
And the church doesn't require people to suffer. I mean, the people might get that. You know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. you cannot have any pain medication. You know, it's not nothing like that. You know,
the ERDs are very clear in terms of being able to appropriately treat pain. The ERDs are just the ethical and religious directives I mentioned. Absolutely, to use whatever you can to help address pain. But recognizing that suffering can have a deeper meaning as well
is
a distinctly Catholic perspective, I would say, when we talk about the idea of redemptive suffering.
Mm-hmm.
So
so either way, you're good, right?
It's all,
in a way, you know what I'm saying?
It all can be.
You're not required to suffer, but if you are suffering, there can be meaning in that.
Absolutely, right.
When you talk about medical ethics, it seems like every time you go to especially like a new doctor that you haven't been to before, one of the questions on that endless list of questions is always, do you have an advance directive, a living will, a mm-hmm. medical power of attorney? What are those? Which one's best? What should they include?
So I would, and this is just kind of my opinion, but I think that it's well-founded in the church's tradition, is saying that, so it's okay for you to think about decisions that you might have to make in the future. Mm-hmm. Obviously, when you get to that point, you're going to need to take into account all the facts that you have present, right? But to be able to say, you know what, if it ever came to this and I were going to have to be on a ventilator forever, you know, I don't think that that would be worthwhile. Okay, advanced directives are documents that help you capture that conversation.
Okay.
The one that I would best recommend, actually, is the one that where you designate somebody to make decisions for you. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Call it a healthcare representative document. You can help set that up with your lawyer, or what they call a healthcare power of attorney, which is different from a financial power of attorney. But those are the ones where you say, okay, I want this person who knows me the best to be able to make decisions for me when I can't. And it doesn't need to be at the end of life. And as soon as you're 18, I would recommend you have that because it allows for peace of mind for your family. The second part of that then is you need to have those conversations around what you find meaningful in life. Don't try and be the medical expert in terms of saying, well, I would want a ventilator and I would want a feeding tube, but that's not what you as a patient should be thinking about. Think about, I want to see my kids grow up, right?
Mm-hmm.
I want to see my kids get married, or I want to be able to, go somewhere with my wife one last time. Those are the types of goals that patients, that's your expertise, right?
Mm-hmm.
So then what happens is when you're able to articulate your goals like that, medicine can come in and say, well, we either have the capability of helping you get to your goal, or we don't have that and we need to formulate a new goal.
Mm-hmm.
And so it takes all the, you don't need to be the expert on medicine, off the table, and lets the docs and the nurses be them, you know, their expertise. And you are able to say, okay, this is what I need you to help me work towards. And that ultimately allows for a good conversation between the two sides, because what happens is sometimes, you know, patients come in and they've done a lot of research on Google and WebMD, and they come in and say, no, I want this treatment, that treatment, like it's a, you know, like a sandwich shop.
Mm-hmm.
When that it messes with the dynamics of the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I would say is, being able to have those tools like the advanced directives mm-hmm. to facilitate the conversation mm-hmm. rather than kind of trump the conversation.
Mm-hmm. Because again, like you said, it's going to depend on the person's situation. I mean, and a lot of different factors involved.
How much of a legal thing is involved, or does an attorney have to be involved, or can you tell your best friend, I want you to be my power of attorney and I'll be your power of attorney and here's what we want?
So what there's I'll say more formal ways to do it. So yeah, the one with the attorney is definitely the best, but the hospitals should have a healthcare representative form that you can fill out there. That would count just as much. you can have, you know, for all intents and purposes, you can write it on a piece of paper and have it witnessed, and there you go. That's better than nothing. Mm-hmm. But Indiana does have now a state statute that spells out a decision-making hierarchy if you don't have anything in place, which would be fallback. Mm-hmm. We didn't used to have that. Now we have a nice structure that doesn't answer everything, but it goes a long way to helping sort things out.
So the two points that I'm taking is to have a healthcare representative designated, and then also to really know, have goals, mm-hmm. goals for life, you know, because in the event that there is those circumstances come up, or when they come up, there's a easier parameter for the medical decisions to be made.
Yeah.
And that I've never heard that perspective before.
That's absolutely the clearest and most helpful thing that I've seen time and time again, because then you are able to say, express what you find meaningful and significant in your life, right? Mm-hmm. Of saying, look, I just want to go to Mass on a daily basis, right? If you can't help me do that, then you know what? I'm going to be fine with just kind of going the comfort care route. For instance, this is an example. But it allows for people to say, well, okay, here's how we align medicine to help you meet your goals.
Yep.
It also allows for you to reevaluate your goals, right? To say, look, you're asking us, you know, you're 100 years old and you're asking us to do full resuscitation and all this kind of stuff, and you've got stage 4 cancer. I don't think that, you know, you're going to live another 20 years,
mm-hmm. right? Right. So you got to take all those things into consideration. Now, I want to talk quickly about this event coming up Sunday, October 27th. We only have about a minute or so left.
Okay.
Tell me what you're going to talk about. Obviously, this topic, and will there be Q&A? Give us the lowdown.
Q&A will be present. That's the most fun for me.
Yeah.
And I'll say we're going to just use some cases.
Okay.
Real life cases that, or compilations of real life cases that have been put together by the team there at the parish. And then we'll use those as an introduction into kind of various teachings and principles from the church's perspective, and then go into Q&A.
Okay, so that will be Sunday, October 27th at 10:40 a.m. at Our Lady of Mount Carmel in the St. Thomas Aquinas room. And for more information, if people want to get information about just this topic, do you have like a resource or a webpage people
can
go to?
I would point them to the Catholic Health Association, the Catholic Medical Association, and the National Catholic Bioethics Center, and then also the USCCB websites. Like, there's a lot of resources out there. So,
and we'll try to put one of those links to the podcast that we have. But our guest today has been Dr. Elliot Bedford, Director of Ethics Integration for St. Vincent Health. Thanks so much for being our guest today.
It's a pleasure. Thank you.
We look forward to seeing you speak on this topic some more and get some Q&A.
All right. That'll be great.
God bless.
God bless.
You have been listening to Faith in Action, the program that looks at how people put their faith into action in their everyday lives. Faith in Action is a presentation of Catholic Radio Indy. You can hear this episode of Faith in Action again, or any past episode, at CatholicRadioIndy.org. If you have a suggestion for a guest or topic for a future program, please call us at 317-870-8400 or email Jim at CatholicRadioIndy.org.